It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Into a Thursday morning, we step into the vortex of the weekend, at least the extended part of the weekend, for those of you extending your weekend. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Light the Tower, here on the Horn, your flagship station for University of Texas Sports. My name is Craig Way. Glad to have you alongside. Always pleased to be joined by my co-host, the one and only Jeff Howe, Horns 24/7. How are you this morning, Jeffrey?
Wonderful. Busy, busy morning, busy weekend, but great day to be alive in Austin, Texas.
No doubt about it. Our producer, Jonathan John Donaldson, Jay Donaldson. We know him as Snoop Daniels. Snoop, how you rolling this morning?
Great. Flex day, state tournament with Rouse day. It's a good day.
Well, you know, it's funny that you bring up state baseball tournament because it's been going on, and I spent some time both at Dell Diamond yesterday and at UFC Udish Frog Field. State baseball going on. There's a lot of excitement in this town right now for any number of reasons. Obviously, the NCAA Super Regional begins on Saturday night for Longhorn baseball. They're two wins away from going to the College World Series in Omaha. You've got that. You got Longhorn football continuing to have great news with student athletes wanting to be a part of this very special place and this town and this school and all of that. And I guess it also holds for basketball, Jeff. I mean, since Chris Beard has been in town, the atmosphere has been electric, has been excited. The coaching staff he's put together, our old friend Chris Ogden, who was a Longhorn hero in a lot of ways. It was an intern of mine when he was a student athlete at Texas. Ogie was, outstanding coach, and now a part of Coach Beard's staff. So all of this stuff seems to be just coming together at the right time.
And with that in mind, we got a little bit of breaking news.
Oh, do you really?
Basketball front. When we talk about recruiting, we're just not talking about it in terms of football. Steve Sarkisian is busy on the 40 acres on the football front. But Chris Beard, I'll tell you what, Craig, this staff is not messing around. When they talk about wanting to get the best players in the country to come to Texas, and obviously that starts with taking care of business in your backyard, they've got a massive visitor on campus this weekend. And this guy, he's an early favorite for my favorite Hooper statewide in the class of 2022. Anthony Black, 6'7 guard from Coppell. Former football player. He played football at Coppell and a legitimate, like, FBS-level wide receiver prospect, but focusing on basketball now. Number 59 overall in the country in the 24/7 Sports composite rankings. Number 10-ranked combo guard, according to the 24/7 Sports composite. Number 9-ranked prospect in the state of Texas. But, Craig, I don't know if there's a guy in this state, and he's one of those top guys in the country. When you talk about the word upside, because he was a dual sport athlete, now just focusing on basketball, the sky's the limit for him. He is on his official visit to Texas as we speak right now. He's making his way around the 40 acres, making his way around town.
Well, I will tell you this. You know, all of the composite rankings and all the things you said about him are all very, very impressive. But the most impressive thing to me is he's a Coppell cowboy. He's from the DF Dub, okay? I lived in Coppell for a brief time, but I'm just telling you, he's that in and of itself, you know. That's good to hear. Hopefully the visit goes well for him this weekend.
His mom Jennifer with him on the visit. She played soccer at Texas. His dad Craig, who I think you called a couple of his basketball games, Terry Black, former Baylor Bear.
Absolutely. Remember him well.
His younger brother, Beckham, is also apparently a rising seventh grade prospect. So this is a family that's got some ties to Texas. And Chris Beard and his staff looking to get Anthony Black to the 40 acres. You know, his favorite NBA player is James Harden, from what I hear.
There you go.
You know, that's not a bad guy to model your game after. And, you know, you look at the scouting reports our guys at 24/7 Sports have put together. You know, Brandon Jenkins, one of our national recruiting analysts, compares him to a guy. And granted, I think the good that you talk about Anthony Black, you talk about upside, compares him to a guy like Marcus Garrett, but you're talking about a guy with 6'7", who's 6'7", and has length. You know, he is a former dual sport athlete, but this is a little bit of Brandon Jenkins' scouting report. Big playmaking guard, excellent in transition, can play and guard all three perimeter positions. That's the kind of stuff you're looking for in this day and age in college basketball. Bottom line, versatile talent with great long-term tools who is only beginning to tap into his upside. So use that word upside. This is a tremendous, tremendous prospect that this staff is chasing right now.
And probably a perfect fit if it works out that way. So, like you said, hopefully that visit goes well for him. That would be that'd be something else. That'd be something else for the program and for him. I think it'd be a really good fit. Good to hear that news. We've got so much to get to today on the program. Obviously, we've got the NCAA Super Regional to discuss. We've got Longhorn football to discuss, as well as basketball and baseball. Our Longhorn notebooks coming up at the bottom of the hour. We have that. We have our Inconceivable segment coming up a little bit later on this hour. And the next hour, with all of the moving and shaking that's going on in college baseball, with the jaw-dropping news about Texas A&M landing Jim Schlossnagel, the TCU baseball head coach. I think folks who had followed it very, very closely kind of perhaps saw what was coming in. And nobody followed it more closely than Kendall Rogers. He broke the news at D1Baseball.com. Arizona State appears ready to hire its new coach after parting company with Tracy Smith, and could be jaw-dropping news with regard to LSU's hire. So yeah. Kendall's going to join us next hour to talk about all that and to preview the NCAA Super Regionals.
Right around 11:10. Craig, one thing I forgot to mention about Anthony Black, I'd be remiss if I didn't. We're not just talking about a two-sport athlete. We're talking about a guy who's actually a three-sport athlete. Done a little bit of high jump and triple jump.
Wow.
In track and field. So you tie all that together. You've got a 6'7 uber athlete, and you look at his genes. Mom played Power 5 level soccer. Dad played Power 5 level basketball and played professionally overseas. Legitimate FBS prospect in football, done some track and field, exceptional upside. I think about what this staff did, you know, when Chris Beard was at Texas Tech, what they did with a guy like Zaire Smith, who was another one of those just kind of raw, another guy from the Metroplex, just kind of a raw uber athlete. He ends up leaving Lubbock as a first-round
draft. Yeah, I think he was from Lakeview Centennial in Garland, if I remember.
So this staff, they know how to develop. And like you said, the key thing is just his versatility on the defensive end of the floor. That he fits right into what Chris Beard and the staff, what they want to do in terms of how they want to build a basketball team.
Well, that'll make me feel like OG since since I remember when his mom was playing soccer in Texas. I remember when his dad was playing basketball and Baylor broadcasting games back in the day on that. But you know, broadcasting games, being the play-by-play guy for Texas, it keeps me feeling young. That's the thing.
I think you'd like to be calling some of Anthony Black's basketball games, though, at some point.
Sign me up. I'm down. I'm down for that.
Exactly.
We'll continue to report on things as they go forward. Snoop Daniel is usually kept young by being around student athletes. You got Flex ATX coming up tonight.
I do tonight. Yes.
And the plan?
Well, the plan is I'm going to go right after we're done with what we do here to go get my credential for state.
Mm-hmm.
Leave here as soon as the show was done to maybe catch the last inning of the state tournament game with Rouse
tonight.
They're taking
so as soon as Flex ATX is done tonight.
8:54.
You're out the door. You're going to zip up. Yeah. Well, listen, if it's any consolation to you, sometimes with the state tournament, games get a little bit delayed.
Cool.
Because one game might go a little longer. Now, I was at both yesterday at Del Diamond and then at UFC Udish Falk Field, and they pretty much stayed on schedule. The games at Dish did stay on schedule there. And by the way, Rusk getting past Sinton, coached by lifetime Longhorn Adrian Alanis, was there. And then, gosh, Pleasant Grove, very impressive in a 13-0 run rule of
Pleasant Grove is a powerhouse.
Yeah, well, it's their eighth state tournament in the last 13 years, and to beat a Stephenville team that had knocked out Argyle, the number one team in the state, the defending state champions, was pretty impressive. So that's what's going on there. And then, of course, you have the other classification. That's in 4A. The other classifications all being contested over at Del Diamond, including tonight, as you mentioned, the Rouse Raiders. Good luck to them.
Hallsville? Hallsville?
Hallsville.
Oh, Hallsville. Okay.
No, Hallsville from East Texas.
East Texas.
Okay.
Yeah, playing Hallsville.
Lifetime Longhorn Josh Cochran from Hallsville.
That's right, from Hallsville. That's exactly right. So, anyway, there's that's kind of a local look at things.
I've made a lot of Josh Cochran references on this show in the last several months, Craig.
Really?
His brother's the head coach at Lindale, and you called a state championship game. So.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And Josh actually now is the offensive line coach at Austin Peay.
That's exactly
under,
right.
Under Scotty Walden.
Yep, and follow him on Twitter as well. So you're right. So the UT family has long tentacles.
I'll tell you this too. Like this should tell you all you need to know about Josh Cochran, his status, and a kind of a rising star in the coaching ranks. You know who thinks the world of Josh Cochran?
Who's that?
Matt Rhule.
Yeah.
Because I asked Matt Rhule because he had two guys on his staff, two lifetime Longhorns on his staff, Frank Ocam and Josh Cochran. And randomly, run into Matt Rhule a couple times, during one of those summers, and asked him about both those guys. He had glowing things to say about both those guys. He actually said they had to switch Josh Cochran, I think switch him from like a graduate assistant to an analyst just so they could get him some kind of compensation. Like we need to pay him something because he's that good and that worthy of a spot.
And we got to hold on to him.
Yeah, needed to hold on to him. And obviously Frank Ocam now is with Matt Rhule in Carolina.
Yeah.
So both those guys doing really well for themselves.
And it started off with their time as student athletes at UT. You know, the old...
Yep.
You know, so...
kind of an intern was Chris Ogden for you, by the way?
Well, no, he was good. He was good. No, you know, what was funny about Augie is that he would do whatever I would ask him to do. And I, you know, first met him when he was, you know, the sharp shooting big man from Seminole at the state tournament and the Mr. Basketball in Texas his senior year in high school. And then, of course, the years that he played at UT under Rick Barnes. And he was a good intern. He would do whatever asked. But see, I kind of violated what should have been what you do with supposedly the conventional wisdom with interns is you have them, you know, whatever, get you coffee or you have them maybe learn how to edit some things or that. I put him on the air because he was fun to talk basketball with. So I would do that a lot. So but he was good. He would do whatever we needed to be done, and he enjoyed it too. At least I think he did. I have to tell the that since you brought it up, I have to tell the Chris Ogden story.
I didn't know there was a Chris Ogden story.
There are many, but this is the one that comes most recently to mind. This, I believe, was the last year that Coach Barnes was at Texas. And we're at the Big 12 tournament in Kansas City. And I was on the bus with the team. We were coming back from a shoot-around at the then Sprint Center, now, you know, T-Mobile Center. And we were rolling back up to the hotel. In those days, we were staying down in the plaza area. And the bus rolls up, and Augie, with the rest of the coaching staff, is sitting up front, you know, in the first two, three rows. And I'm like a row or two behind them. And the coaches are getting off the bus. And Augie jumps up, and he's getting off the bus, and his wallet fell out of his shorts, the workout shorts, where he had his wallet with him. And the wallet fell out. And he didn't see it, and he was just kind of – he was in a hurry to get off the bus. He was getting off the bus, and I picked it up, and I was going to, you know, flag him down and say, hey, Augie, here's your wallet. But Coach Barnes stopped me. Rick said, I'll give it to him. I knew something was up because Coach Barnes was a practical joker. Once my wallet fell out of my pants pocket in a charter flight with a team to East Lansing, Michigan before a game with Michigan State. And it was gone, and I couldn't find it, and I saw a smirk or two, so I knew it was, I just had to be patient. I got it back at breakfast the next day. And you know, sure enough, Rick had it. So I knew something was up. So what Coach Barnes did was to take Augie's wallet. He took a credit card out of the wallet. He knew Augie's home address. He called a florist. He had 24 roses sent to Katie, to Chris's wife, to the house. I believe it was 24 roses, with a card that read, "Honey, I'm sorry. I made a terrible mistake. I'll explain when I get home." Now, to Katie's credit, she knew that it had to be a joke.
Yeah.
She knew. Well, I talked to her about it. She laughed it off and said, "Oh, yeah, Coach Barnes, you get to where you didn't." You know, I can remember when we came back, gosh, this would have been around 2000 or so, when Dan Hearn was the ops director, and we came back. We were still flying some commercial flights back in the day. We came back from a game in Tucson against Arizona, and we get off the plane. And in those days, if you had a hanging bag, a garment bag, mm-hmm. they would put it in a cardboard box, and then if you checked it, and then put it on the conveyor, and your belt would come off. Well, Coach Barnes gets off the plane first. So Rick gets off the plane, and the boxes, the cardboard boxes, and all the coaches had their garment bags in the cardboard boxes, these big, tall garment bag boxes, and they're marked with big black capital letters with marks a lot. Barnes, you know, whatever, so-and-so, you know, Terry, for like Coach Terry. Mm-hmm. And there was one that said Ahern for Dan. So Rick gets down to the baggage claim before Dan Ahern does, pulls the box off, pulls the garment bag out of the box and puts the box back on the conveyor belt, and then goes and hides the garment bag over the
floor. Man.
That's the kind of practical joker Rick Barnes was. So yeah, and just to see the look on Dan Ahern's face when he comes over, he takes his box off the belt and he looks into it forlornly. But even Dan knew something was afoot there.
You know, what I like about this staff, Craig, the staff Chris Beard has put together, and him as a lifetime Longhorn coming back to Texas, you really get a pretty meaty chunk of Texas basketball history with this staff.
Sure.
Right? Like with Chris Beard, with his time on campus, you trace it back to me growing up as a young kid going to basketball games at the Irwin Center. You can tie it to the B.J. Tyler, Terrence Rencher years. Mm-hmm. That are near and dear to my heart.
And Coach Beard was, you could see back in the early 90s, Jeff, you could see the future coach in him.
Yeah.
Even then, as a, you know, student coach and manager, you could see that then. Eddie Oren, my broadcast partner, who Coach O was Coach Pender's top assistant back then, Eddie could see it back then.
Yeah.
He knew that Chris was destined for coaching success. He knew it.
And then you look at Chris Ogden's time at Texas as a player,
mm-hmm.
a student assistant, his time in kind of that administrative mm-hmm. role, then as an assistant coach. I mean, Craig, you look at some of the best players that have come through this program, TJ Ford, Kevin Durant, LaMarcus Aldridge,
yeah.
Tristan Thompson, up to Miles Turner. I mean, Chris Ogden's been around all those guys.
Yep.
And then now you've got this little gap where you've got the Shaka Smart era. Rod and Terry was also a big part of that. And now
no doubt. It
comes to Chris Beard. So it's just I like the fact that it's guys that understand what basketball can be at this place
mm-hmm.
if you do it the right way. And recruiting guys, like we already just had a text on the Specs text line, 337-3776. The fervor for basketball, the juice and the juice for basketball, the thirst for basketball, even you know me covering it from a media standpoint, it hasn't been like this in a while. Like getting texts like one text says, "Can you imagine Anthony Black and Keontae George playing together?" Keontae George obviously was on campus last weekend, but this is exactly what this staff. It's a credit to them how they're attacking recruiting right now. They're going after guys that not only are the best players in the state of Texas, which puts you in the conversation for some of the best players in the country, but guys that fit what they want to do. Because it's like that conversation we had yesterday, Craig, talking about football. There's a difference between collecting talent and building a team. Chris Beard's trying to build one heck of a team with some really, really talented pieces that fit what they want to do and who they want to be as a basketball program.
Add that to the fact you got a new arena arriving starting in 2022-23, and it's pretty exciting.
The buzz is palpable, as they say.
Absolutely. Coming up, we're going to have our Longhorn Notebook segment here at the bottom of the hour, and you have something football-related, I take it?
Yesterday, just kind of looking at Texas and the terms of competing for a national championship, and we're going to look at dark times and when this dark period of Texas football might be over. And I've got some encouraging news for Longhorn fans.
Okay, we'll get to that. And we have a lot more still to come here on Light the Tower, here on The Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, viewable by those of you watching us on Twitch. We're live, we're local, we're digital on The Horn app and at hornfm.com. Stand
by you. Find new roads. Craig Way, Jeff Howe, and Snoop Daniel. Light the Tower.
This is Light the Tower on the Horn. Craig Way, Jeff Howe with you. Snoop Daniel alongside. We're with you up till noon. Shirts and Skins, Chad and Trey coming up at that point. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll have our Inconceivable segment for today. Kendall Rogers, D1Baseball.com, joins us in the 11 o'clock hour, just past the top of the hour, to discuss the coaching changes that have happened in college baseball and to preview the NCAA Super Regional this weekend between the Longhorns and South Florida. UFC Udish Farfield's already sold out, so there'll be over 7,000 packed in the ballpark. What is it you would like to say about such a situation like that, Snoop, about what the environment will be like?
It's going to be lit.
Yeah, there it is. It'll be lit.
Oh, my God. It will be.
Yeah.
And it's so cool and hip to be into Texas baseball right now. Like, people are loving the culture.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, man, that Saturday game against Arizona State, there have been very few environments since I've been covering and or attending Texas sporting events that were as electric as that was on Saturday night.
I agree.
It was our first big gathering on the 40 acres that we've been a part of in the press box, press row stands, whatever. The first big one like that post-COVID, like a Saturday night regional game. I think everybody was just kind of frothing at the mouth to get excited, feel normal for a little bit for a few hours.
A, absolutely correct. B, it was the first time we'd had that type of environment since 18. Especially at Longhorn Bay, especially the Saturday night game against Texas A&M, Cody Clemens with a home run to lead off the ball game, and the place was. In fact, David Pierce, the Longhorns head baseball coach, was on this morning with Aaron, and he said that Saturday night environment reminded him of that, about how that was. And by the way, Coach Pierce didn't say absolutely unequivocally that what his starting pitching situation was for the Super Regional, but he did kind of say they're leaning toward going back to Ty Madden getting the ball to start game one on Saturday night. He said, we'll finalize that decision later this afternoon. By the way, somebody on the Specs text line, as we were talking about winning and doing stuff, someone said, You play to win the game. Whenever you say that.
Hello? You play to win the game.
Thank you, Coach Edwards, Herm Edwards, there. Now the head football coach at Arizona State. Yep. So it is time now for the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cpdoors.com.
Love the interstitial right there. Let's talk about some good stuff and some not-so-good stuff, Craig, that we hope is eventually good stuff, if that makes any sense. So my colleague Brad Crawford at 24/7 Sports, by the way, you can get all your Longhorn football news, notes, and nuggets, all your Longhorn sports needs, recruiting stuff, all of that at Horns 24/7. But the 24/7 Sports National folks, we had Chris Hummer on earlier this week. Chris does great work in that development rate story. But Brad Crawford, in light of the reports, I think Pete Thamel was, Craig was the first to come out with it, about college football playoff expansion going to the 12-team format. Brad just did an article entitled Future Champions, Teams Who Could Win the College Football Playoff Over the Next Decade. And he lists teams, obviously, Alabama, and then looks at number of titles over the next decade, like how many, you know, could a program win. And some of these are pretty safe bets. Alabama, three or more. Clemson, three or more. Ohio State, two. Georgia, at least one. Oklahoma, multiple playoff appearances. LSU, at least two playoff appearances. Notre Dame, multiple playoff appearances. Texas A&M, at least one playoff appearance. Same for Florida. And then you get down to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Texas, Oregon, and North Carolina are all in the same boat of chance to reach the playoff.
Okay.
So I just want to read some of what Brad wrote, and then I'll get into the meat of what I want to discuss today.
Sure.
So he said, it's debatable, sure, but the Longhorns appear to have made a home run hire this time around with Steve Sarkisian taking over the program earlier this spring. Coming off of a brilliant rejuvenation with Alabama under Nick Saban's tutelage, Sarkisian cleaned up his image and showcased his talent as one of college football's top offensive minds. He assembled a terrific staff in short order at Texas and has at least given Oklahoma and Iowa State something to think about moving forward. At the top of the Big 12, Blue Bloods tapping the transfer portal in coming years will be an important aspect of roster building as well as keeping the top prospects in state. So we talked about a lot of that on the recruiting front, building through the transfer portal, all that fun stuff. So, you know, right now, and we're kind of in this cycle, Craig, where people look at it and say, well, you know, every year Texas gets talked about. Is this going to be the breakthrough? Is this going to be the year when it happens? On and on and on and on and on. And I kind of want to look at dark period, the two most notable dark periods in this program. And I'm only talking about
kind of, look at you getting all dark here.
Kind of post-Daryl Royal era in terms of dark periods. Because if you look at Coach Royal's tenure, save for that run between the 63 national championship season and when they went to the Wishbone in 68, there was that lull right there. But other than that, you could look at Coach Royal's tenure. He won consistently the entire time.
Yeah, they had the back-to-back 6-4s in 66 and 67.
Yeah, and then they find the Wishbone and then have what a lot of Longhorn fans still consider kind of the true golden era of Texas mm-hmm. football. So I just looked at, Craig, to me, there's two dark periods. One that happened, and both of these have happened in my lifetime. One that Texas was in kind of the mid-80s through most of the 90s, and then the one they're in now. So the dark period for me goes from the first one goes from 84 to 97. So you're coming off of the 83 season where we know Texas was right there on the cusp of winning a national championship under Fred Akers. They lose the Cotton Bowl to Georgia. And towards the end of the 84 season, they had the Freedom Bowl loss to Iowa, and the bottom kind of falls out for Fred Akers. So 84 to 97. In that window, obviously Texas goes through multiple head coaches. The end of Fred Akers' tenure, all of David McWilliams, all of John Makovic. Conference championships, Texas did win four conference titles. So you have 90 of the Shock the Nation Tour. 94 is technically a conference championship. Guys have rings from that season, but as we talked about, that was a four-way tie, and A&M couldn't claim a conference championship because they were on probation.
Five-way tie.
Well, oh, it was a okay.
Texas, Texas Tech, Rice, Baylor, TCU.
Gosh, okay.
94.
Five-way tie.
The bizarre 94 season. Five-way tie.
Then
at 4-3 in the league.
But then you do have the last Southwest Conference championship in 95, which was legitimate, yep. And then the first Big 12 championship in 96. So you got four conference championships. Top 25 finishes in those 14 seasons. Four top 25 finishes, none higher than number 12. That's where Texas was in the final AP poll in 1990. And 10 win seasons, you only had two. 1990 and 1995 were both 10 win seasons. So what got you out of that dark period? You made the right hire. You brought Mack Brown to town. You have Ricky Williams' Heisman season. You have that just watershed recruiting year, that 99 recruiting class with Corey Redding and Chris Sims. Rod Babers was a part of that class. And things are off and running after that.
Right.
Let's go to the dark period Texas is in now, Craig, starting similar to how the first one started, a painful loss in a national championship game. And I know there are a lot of Longhorn fans listening to this show that'll still contest till the day they go into the ground that if Colt McCoy doesn't get hurt, Mack Brown has another national championship. In my, how different things might have been for the football program. Nonetheless,
mm-hmm. One of the great unanswerable questions.
Exactly. So this 11-season dark period starts with the 2010 season and goes through the end of the 2020 season. No conference championships. Now we know Texas ended up playing for 1-13 when they played Baylor on the final day of the regular season for the conference title, and then made the Big 12 championship game in 18. Top 25 finishes, four, the same number in that 14-season dark period. Finished in the top 25 in 12, and then each of Tom Herman's final three seasons, 18, 19, and 20. You did have one top 10 finish. You finished ninth in the AP poll mm-hmm. in 2018, which was also your 1-10 win season.
the Sugar Bowl campaign.
Right. So it's also worth noting, Craig, that Texas, you know, the first year of the Southwest Conference, their first year to play football was 1915. And since then, Texas has had a conference championship in every decade except one. That would be the decade of the 2010s. There was no conference championship last decade. So right. You are in a dark period, and it might even be darker than the previous 14-season one. But what can get Texas out of this dark period? What can get Texas competing for a national championship in the college football playoff discussion with the door a little more open with an expanded playoff, which we think it will be once the new CFP format goes into play? Again, if this gets passed as it's been kicked around, then it will. If you hire the right guy, That's all it boils down to, Craig. And I can sit here till I'm blue in the face and talk about multiple things. We could talk about player development. We could talk about facilities, all this stuff. When Mac was rattling off 10-win seasons and going to Rose Bowls and winning a national championship and putting a bunch of draft picks in the NFL and talking about or having a lot of first-round picks, Mac still had his detractors. But overall, we weren't talking about things like facilities or the city of Austin or the entitlement culture at Texas. We were talking about those things being issues preventing the program from being great.
Right.
Why? Because you had the right guy in charge of the program.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it all boils down to for me. If Steve Sarkisian's the right guy, then we're not going to be sitting here talking about, well, you know, it's the city of Austin that, you know, guys get here and they just get too comfortable, or it's this entitlement factor, it's a lack of player development, or it's this, that, and the other. If Steve Sarkisian's the right guy, we will figure it out pretty quick, and this dark period will be over, and Texas could launch into, Craig, what looks like across the board, again, except the two major sports, and we just got done talking about all the things Chris Beard is doing to get men's basketball going in the right direction. You're not going to enter a new golden era, a new golden age, if you will, of Texas athletics, unless football is a part of that. And you'll get there if Steve Sarkisian's ultimately the right guy.
Yeah. Name, that's a great way to put it.
It sounds simple, but, you know, again, you just got to hit the ground running, and you've got to understand where you're at. And I think the fact that Sark he's said he learned a heck of a lot from his first tenure as a head coach when he was at Washington and his time at USC. And then, you know, spending the time that he spent around Pete Carroll, spending the time that he spent around Nick Saban, you know, he's been in the NFL, he's had life experiences, he's lived. He's, you know, he kind of reinvented himself at Bama, and just getting some of that Nick Saban rub, if you will. There are a lot of things that you can look at and point to and say, yeah, this has really got a chance to work. And if it does, then we'll be talking about the end of this dark period, entering another time in Texas football where you're talking about all the things we talk about when this program really has it rolling. But, you know, if not, we'll be here in a few years. For my sanity. And for, you know, everybody's long-term health, I hope not. I hope this is the right hire, but that's all it takes. That's what got Texas out of that dark period from 84 to 97, is in the winter of 97, you hired the right guy, and we'll find out in relatively short order if in the winter of 2021 if they made the right hire.
On the Specs text line, that somebody addressing my point when we're talking about that that BCS National Championship game against Alabama, when I said it's eternally the unanswerable question, had Colt McCoy not been injured, they said, it's answerable, Craig. Texas 100% would have won. So, I like how you're thinking there. Somebody else said, why don't we ever talk about the Crabtree Gideon game? Must we? Anyway, it says, I think that would have been a national championship year as well if they didn't lose that game. The point's made, if that game doesn't end the way that it did, Texas clearly, they go to the Big 12 championship game for a rematch with Missouri, who they had summarily throttled a couple of weeks prior.
I was not there for that, but you were there. One of the better home and football environments that people still talk about.
Yeah, game day was there. I mean, it was nuts, that whole thing was. And, I mean, there were many, 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 many more what-if moments in that game other than, you know, Blake Gideon being unable to hold on to that tip drill interception.
Here's my take on the 08 season and why it's different than like the Craig Curry punt return against Georgia or Colt getting injured against Alabama the next year. to me, Texas Tech removed itself from the discussion when it went to Norman and just got throttled. I forget what the score of that game was.
Something like 65. It was
65-21 or
something like that. Yeah. It was an absolute wipeout.
At that point, to me, it became a two-horse race between Texas and Oklahoma, and conventional wisdom says, okay, Texas won the head-to-head matchup on a neutral field in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, Texas should be your representative in the Big 12 championship game. But at the time, we know this conference has very rarely ever been forward-thinking on anything. And
they were the one Division I FBS conference not to utilize the BCS tie-breaking system of if you're not in the top five of the other two in the deadlock, you're removed from the equation, then it goes to head-to-head.
Yeah.
They were the one. Otherwise, Texas would have gone. They weren't, so they just used it total. And by a, you know, whatever, something 48 thousandths of a point, some number like that, Oklahoma got the nod. So that's what happened there, and credit Texas with going about its business and on in the Fiesta Bowl and winning a BCS Bowl, beating Ohio State in that great game with Colt to Quan's final catch as a Texas Longhorn for the touchdown there with 26 seconds or 21 seconds left in the game. But anyway, that's the person texting in about that. Yeah, there's a very real chance. Now, had they won the game against Tech and gone on and beaten Missouri in the rematch in the Big 12 championship game, you're talking Tim Tebow in Florida,
right,
for the national championship. So it would have been interesting.
It's just like 2001, that Big 12 championship game. And
right.
Before I became a media member, just watching as a bystander, that's one of the more painful losses to experience for a lot of Longhorn fans. Because you realize right before kickoff, oh, my gosh, if they win this game, they're playing for a national championship.
Mm-hmm.
And me, in my lifetime, like, Texas playing for a national championship was just so much of an outside-the-box concept.
Sure.
You couldn't believe it was right there in front of you. But, you know, Rod and I had this conversation. We've had this conversation many times on the Longhorn Blitz podcast. I wouldn't have liked Texas' chances against Miami in a national championship game, but it would have been in a much more entertaining game than the one we got.
Mm-hmm.
Where it looked like Nebraska had no business being on the same field as that Miami team.
Right, true. Our man CB says the 08 is the second best team of the MAC era, and he thinks they beat Florida had they played for it. It was certainly one of my favorites. That 08 team was
they beat
really
Florida.
Good.
I mean, I've heard.
To have seen it.
I might be misremembering this. I think Vance Bedford has come out and said, because he was part of that Florida. I think he's come out and said that Florida team would have beat that Texas team.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Everybody's got their own opinion.
Everybody got their own opinion about that as well. Somebody else says, hey, I love Coach Cajonas equal Beard. Coach Beard. Okay. All right. Coming up, we'll have our inconceivable segment
you know
here.
What? Yep. I've got one for inconceivable today.
Too, oh, love
Rick.
It.
We've got a new record being set in the card collecting world.
Uh-oh.
Like we're talking about a new one all the time. We got another one.
It's up. It's on deck. Inconceivables next with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. We are live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Two at the tower.
Inconceivable. 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 Inconceivable.
You give your sense of word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Inconceivable means it's always brought to you by our good friend Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and his staff at Austin Orthopedics. Jeff Howell will tell you he's a good dude. You know,
great dude. Yeah. Snoop can vouch for that too.
Absolutely. So, you know, if you've got a sports-related injury or need some consultation, he's the one to visit with. You can check him out on the web at austin-orthopedics.com. You said you got something to lead us off with here.
We've got a new record, Craig, for the most expensive football card ever.
Yeah.
This was a Leland's auction. It took place last week. It is an autographed rookie card of Tom Brady. And for those of you who are card collectors like myself, you can probably figure this out. It is the 2000 Playoff Contenders Championship Ticket card. It is the autograph version. Only about 100 of these exist, Craig, which is why it's so valuable. This one, it's the highest grade that any of the grading services have given it. It is a Mint 9, according to Beckett Grading Services. Sold at auction. This is an indication. The starting bid was $750,000.
Oof.
And there were 32 bids placed.
Wow.
Which is why this particular Tom Brady card sold for $3.1 million.
Wow.
It is the most expensive football card ever.
Impressive. Okay.
But this just shows you where the trading card market is, Craig. During that same auction, the football that that was the first touchdown pass of Tom Brady's career, that football went up for bid at the same auction, which you think that's probably worth more than a trading card, right? Because there's only one of those.
Yep.
That football sold for $430,000.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. To be in that
business.
And
the card sold for more than $3.1
million. To be in that business.
Trust me, I am not that high end of a collector.
Otherwise, you wouldn't be sitting here in this room.
Yeah, I wouldn't be doing the show.
That's for sure. Speaking of mind-boggling, this is unfortunate news, and we hope he recovers. But a teenager in Australia is in critical condition. He was in a fishing boat, 18 years of age. Nick Myhill was fishing with his dad off the coast of Narooma, Australia, about 200 miles of Sydney. Hooks a fish, starts to try to reel it in. It was a whale. It leaps out of the ocean and lands on the boat.
Oh, no.
A whale.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah. The guy, a 39-year-old male skipper, advised that his 18-year-old male passenger sustained a serious head injury. The older man, his stepfather, told rescuers he was trying to navigate the boat back to the ramp. Despite the vessel taking on water, the Marine Rescue got the call. The paramedics met the vessel. They treated both men before transferring them to the hospital in Canberra, where the young man is in critical but stable condition right now. The stepfather, was treated in a local hospital for facial lacerations and a concussion.
Well, if a whale jumped on your boat, that's going to cause an extensive amount of damage.
Craig, you should see the boat.
Do you have an Australian news app on your phone? Like, there's a healthy amount of your inconceivable stories this year have come out of Australia.
Yeah, they said all that's inconceivable. It comes from down under, mate. You know?
I don't know if you're like tied into the news organizations down there or
just
what.
That's how it is down there, and that's how the Aussies roll. I'll give you some good news with regard to young people.
If you interview Ryan Bushevsky this year, can you do it in that voice?
Right. He'd be like, you're not even close to the deal. Just stop already. Don't even be doing that. I do have some good news with regard to a young person. This was a story I was going to get to yesterday, but... this was about a young person who received a $40,000 scholarship to go to Harvard. And so she was going to get this $40,000 scholarship. She'd already been accepted to Harvard and was going to get this $40,000 scholarship. She then said, I'm already bound for Harvard, Massachusetts high school senior. And then said, you know, there are people who need that money more than me. Give it to a community college student. She donated her $40,000 scholarship. She's headed for Harvard anyway.
Yeah.
And she's got some grants and some other scholarship stuff. And she said, there are people who need this money worse than I do. And she donated her $40,000 scholarship. To her name is Verdenteta, and she just said, "I need to go ahead and just give this. Somebody else needs it worse than I do." See, so there's hope for young people these days, right? Now, the following two stories I'm going to do is by no means, Jeff Howe, an admission on my part that I have fallen into your way of thinking about the robot wars to come.
No, well.
However.
You should, but okay.
However, as you know, a reporter, I feel it's my duty to at least mention these stories. There's one story about, and this is a good thing. They're trying to help in the health crisis older folks who are having problems, elderly and those affected by the global health crisis. Her name is Grace. It's just, as you take a look at it here, Jeff, she is a humanoid robot here, and it's kind of troubling to see because she looks so lifelike and speaks not like a robot. It's like a recording of a regular person. Her name is Grace. So this has happened in the UK.
It's like something out of Max Headroom.
Yeah, like. But that's it. They have one that looks like a regular android. And then they have this one here who kind of when you visit with her and she responds to you like that. So that one, that's a little bit on the creepy side.
The
there.
One okay. on the left there was a little more creepier to me than the last one.
Yeah, but that
one.
Well, that just looks like a regular robot. Yeah. You know, the other one, I just think the one that looks like a human, you find out it's a robot, would probably scare. And then finally, and this is the part, this goes kind of along the lines of my belief about the animal kingdom deciding to rise up. But instead, it's farmers in England who are trying to deal with weeds. I don't mean like weed, like the smoking kind. I'm talking about actual weeds that are messing with their crops. So what have they done? They brought robots in to try to get rid of the weeds. And you say, okay, well, it's like a combine or whatever. The way that these robots are killing the weeds is zapping them with electricity.
See, I'm telling you, sounds like a great concept, and it was developed with good intentions, but
is that can you what imagine they say? If these robots,
the road to hell is paved with good intentions?
Yeah. I mean, this
Exhibit
is,
A.
These are robots that are, what they do is they go through, first they kind of scan the field and they see what's out there in the field. And then they see where the weeds are. And then they go out there and
It's too much AI. We're all going to regret this one day.
They've got three robots out there. Their names are Tom, Dick, and Harry. These three. They were developed by Small Robot Company to rid the land of unwanted weeds with the minimal use of chemicals and heavy machinery. So, yeah. That's... You know,
Colin robots, Bobby Jenkins.
And these are robots that just go out there in the weeds and zap it with electricity to kill it.
Yeah, to be zapping humans before too long.
That's the part that makes me That's the part that makes me a little bit uneasy.
Get
there.
Your head right for it.
I still think the animal kingdom is what we have to
see. I understand the power of the robots. That's why they'll welcome me into the fold, and I'll be with them while the rest of you are running around with your hair on fire, trying to figure out what the heck is going on.
Do you really think the robot's going to trust you? It's going to zap you with electricity,
I'm a trustworthy guy.
You're a human. The decision has already been made by these robots. All humans must die. Yeah, they're gonna zap you. It's just, you know, it's inevitable. Like you say, you're expecting the robot war to happen. Well, if they happen, they're going to take out the humans.
At some point, Craig's self-preservation instincts got to kick in. Got to do what you got to do to survive.
I guess. Just ask the animals in the animal kingdom.
Now I'm not going to go full on Brad Kellner and marry a sex robot, but I'll figure
Thank
out.
You.
I'll finagle
that.
My way in there somehow.
Okay. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
All right. That's hour number one. We'll get back to regular topics like Kendall Rogers, D1Baseball.com, joining us. Hour number two of Light the Tower headed your way on the Horn. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and hornfm.com.